You probably shouldn't drink that Dr. Pepper. It's not good for you, but if you're going to drink it, you might as well help some kids. That's how the city figures a new tax on sugary sodas being proposed by the mayor. He wants to put a 2 cents per ounce tax on the distributors who sell those kinds of drinks to stores and spend that money on reducing the disparities between white and non-white students. Do you want the city to charge that tax? Is this wise? Are the health benefits overrated? We're going to help you decide now with my guests, Dr. Jim Krieger of the group Healthy Food America, who teaches public health at the University of Washington School of Medicine. Hi, Doc.
Hey, good afternoon.
Food lawyer and George Mason University law professor, Balin Lettiken. Professor, thanks for coming today.
Thanks very much.
Welcome to Seattle.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Jim, you start out with the fact that sugary sodas are insidiously damaging to our health. Will you tell us about that?
Yeah, the evidence is quite clear and rock solid at this point that consuming excessive amounts of sugary drinks, whether they're sports drinks, energy drinks, fruit drinks, or soda, is linked to increased rates of diabetes, heart disease, liver disease, and obesity, and tooth decay.
Balin, would you agree that a soda tax would make people any healthier?
No, I don't think so. I think that regardless of whether soda is good or bad for you, I think that taxing soda is not something that's actually going to be linked to increased health outcomes, better health outcomes. And I think that most soda tax advocates even are careful to not to claim that say, Seattle residents, for example, would lose 2 pounds thanks to the tax.
Okay. Separate from, we'll get into the question maybe of how we behave when we're taxed, but how do you feel even about the health dangers of sugary sodas?
I'm a food lawyer. I have a background in law, and I tend not to comment on the healthfulness or non-healthfulness of particular foods. I think that if you look at consumers across America, we all eat and drink differently. Some people eat vegan, some people keep kosher, some people are paleo. They can't all be wrong, they can't all be right, but I think that people can practice varied diets and still be healthy.
Jim, Bernie Sanders said that soda taxes are regressive because poor people drink more soda. He's not the only one, he's just a famous name. What do you say to that idea? It's a regressive tax.
I think a soda tax is a progressive policy. And the reason I say it's a progressive policy is that when you take the revenues from a soda tax and invest them in low-income communities to improve education, to improve access to early learning, to improve access to healthy foods, to prevent diabetes, then there's a net transfer of money, of wealth, from rich to poor, and those ultimately are going to benefit those communities. So it's a net progressive policy. We also know that the diseases caused by sugary drinks, and I disagree with you, the evidence is rock solid. It doesn't matter if you're a paleo or a vegan, if you drink soda, you're going to increase your risk of diabetes. These diseases are regressive, meaning that low-income people suffer a great and undue burden from diabetes and heart disease and poor teeth. And so by reducing consumption of these, the tax will benefit their health, and so there'll be a win-win in their health and also in more resources for their communities.
Balin, before you say more about regressive versus progressive, do you want to say anything about what Jim is saying that, wait a minute, there's no question that soda is bad for you? I mean, I want to make sure that you get a chance to explain where you are even on that question.
Sure. I mean, again, as a lawyer, I'm not a health expert, but I am an expert on the idea that certain taxes that are allegedly supposed to improve our health won't necessarily do so. We can look at, say, a lottery. The lottery was supposed to make education so much better, but essentially it's operated as a tax on the poor. It hasn't necessarily benefited low-income consumers, learners, and the people you see in line at the lottery counter are usually low-income consumers who are essentially giving the state their money in the same way that those buying soda would be doing.
Would you think of this soda tax as being more regressive, a hit on lower income people who tend to drink more of this soda? Or do you see the progressiveness of it as shifting it to people who could most use those programs?
I certainly understand the argument in the latter case so that it's more progressive. I disagree with it, but I can recognize that argument. I think that when we look at whether it's a progressive tax, whether it's going to somehow benefit low income consumers, taking money from them that they might otherwise use to, say, buy kale or celery or spend at the farmer's market is not necessarily going to improve their health outcomes. It's going to leave them with less money to buy.
Well, actually, if you look at the data, what will happen is low-income people will spend less money net on soda and sugary drinks after a tax goes into effect. Therefore, they'll have more money to spend on fruits and vegetables or whatever else they choose to spend it on. We also know that nobody has to buy soda. Nobody has to pay the tax. So for both those reasons, actually, a tax will end up giving low-income people more money in their pocket to buy healthier foods if they so choose.
I think that's a sugar-free pie in the sky.
No, actually, the evidence data and the tax models and the economic simulation models demonstrate that quite clearly.
Simulations and models can demonstrate lots of different things, and economists have a way of showing us that up is down and down is up.
Balin, what about the fact that this tax excludes diet drinks and frappuccinos, for example? Does that matter to you?
Not particularly. I mean, I think that the government shouldn't be in the business of skewing our food choices in any particular way. And so, you know, this tax excludes diet beverages. It excludes very, very high sugar drinks like orange juice, which doesn't have added sugar, but does have a ton of natural sugar contained in it. And so, you know, if in fact this is, as it appears to have done elsewhere, shifting people from buying more expensive soda X to less expensive soda Y, or to drinking things like orange juice that have almost as much soda as...
I'd be curious to hear the data you base that statement on, because the actual real-world data that we have from Mexico, which is the best-studied case now, show that after imposition of the tax, bottled water and water products went up, sugary drink products went down. There was no net effect on juice or other groceries. So I think there's no evidence to say that folks are actually shifting to less healthy or cheaper products. Sugary drink consumption is down in Mexico. It's down in Berkeley after the tax, and water consumption is up. So people are making the smart choice.
Well, I do take the point that models and analogies are they're hard to rely on.
But these are real data from the real world. This is actual 2 years worth of data on spending in Mexico after a tax is in effect.
Could I chime in? Mm-hmm. The data also shows that the consumption of soda has actually increased since that initial decrease, and it also shows that the soda consumption outside of Berkeley in San Francisco and Oakland has increased, and so it probably means. And again, the data is not as rigid
actually,
as we'd like.
Malin, but the most recent data.
Let me finish, please.
Sure, I'm sorry. Yeah.
That soda consumption in, you know, people essentially are moving to other places to buy their, you know, they're going to Costco and outside of town, which would presumably happen here, rather than simply not buying it.
But, well, couple questions out of this. For one, does it make it a more regressive tax, Jim, when it doesn't fall on diet drinks, given that higher income people tend to go for diet drinks compared to sugary drinks?
I think the issue with diet drinks is we don't really know what their long-term health effects are. They're potentially some people can lose weight short-term if they consume diet drinks in placement of full-calorie sodas, but we don't know the health effects. So from a public policy point of view, if you want strong scientific evidence on which to base a policy like a tax, we don't have enough evidence to know if diet sodas are good or bad.
And what about taxing fruit juices? Is fruit sugar that much better for you?
We actually are going to be publishing later this week in the journal Pediatrics a study looking at fruit juice. And there's no evidence that fruit juice is associated with significant amounts of weight gain in kids, for example. So you can't, again, make the same case about fruit juice having the same effects, which are so clear with sugary drinks like soda, energy drinks, sports drinks, that are linked to weight gain, diabetes, and other problems.
Balin, you think that a soda tax is a kind of slippery slope, right? To other foods. To explain that.
Yeah, it's well on its way down the slippery slope. So, I mean, in addition to opposing soda taxes, I've opposed raw milk bans. I've opposed restrictions on farmers markets. I've opposed California's foie gras ban. I mean, this is simply a way of the government taking more money from consumers or restricting choices and trying to divert, choices into this sort of smaller and smaller funnel. And when we restrict choices, as we know in other areas with speech and religion and whatnot, consumers and Americans and taxpayers are worse off.
Well, first of all, this is a delicious slippery slope. This is one of the most tasty. This is slippery with vegetable oil. But why shouldn't we tax bacon, for example, if it's bad for us? It's, you know, analogous to sodas.
Right, but again, it goes back to who decides. You know, does the American Pork Producers Council decide if bacon is healthy or unhealthy for us? Do public health advocates, do lawmakers, and do consumers? You know, who ultimately is right about whether bacon is healthy? and if they're one right answer.
Do you have any ethical qualms about influencing through taxation what people decide to put in their bodies, Jim?
No, I think that it's very important that people know what's healthy for them and what can cause them harm. It's clear that sugary drinks cause harm. By putting a tax on a product and labeling it as harmful, not only does it raise revenue for supporting low-income communities, but it sends an important public message out. It's an important vehicle for public education to say this product is being taxed because it's going to cause you harm.
Balin, you have said that you want to improve education. I mentioned at the top that Seattle's mayor wants the money raised to go to pay for programs that would reduce disparities among white and non-white students. These taxes aren't the answer. What is the answer?
Well, I think the answer, something that we could redirect money both at the federal level and locally. One thing that we do, which is completely inane and which I suspect, Jim, you probably would agree with, is that we subsidize the sweeteners. You know, we pay farmers to grow corn and we protect sugar tariff, sugar makers and refiners with tariffs. And so get rid of the subsidies for farmers who grow, corn and soy and other things that get corn in particular gets turned into high fructose corn syrup. Why are we essentially, pardon the indelicate language, screwing consumers twice, taxpayers twice, by taxing them once to pay farmers to grow stuff and then taxing them again for buying the things that those farmers grew because we encouraged them? Why not use that money for education?
Any final thoughts from you, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, I think on that point, I think I would agree with you on that policy. However, the tariffs and the subsidies change the price of a consumer product only by a few pennies. It's inconsequential, whereas a tax on sugary drinks is going to raise a lot more revenue for these important purposes. And so coming back to it, I think it's, do we want to support things that are important in our community, like access to pre-K, to education? And a sugary drink tax is a great way to do it because it puts a tax on a product that is harmful, has no nutritional value, and redirects resources from wealthier communities to low-income communities to make that happen.
Again, this proposal would be expected to raise $16 million a year. This is a Seattle tax on the distributors of sodas, so it's not a sales tax right at the register. It includes sodas and energy and sports drinks and pre-sweetened teas and coffees and some fruit drinks, but exempts 100% fruit juice and in-store coffee beverages that you get from your barista and other stuff too, a 2 cent per tax per ounce on distributors. And we're going to continue talking about the pros and cons of this. I really appreciate both of you helping us think it through. Thank you.
Okay,
thanks so much.
We've been talking here with Dr. Jim Krieger of the group Healthy Food America, also at the University of Washington School of Medicine, and food lawyer and George Mason University law professor Balin Linneken. And more to come on soda taxes here on KUOW Seattle, and more of The Record to come as well. I hope you can stay tuned.